welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. That debt is fraud. Don't forget your campaign begins today. And the whole point is holding our public servants accountable. And what we need, just like I say about the Department of Justice, we need them to actually start going after if you want to fix America's problems, if you really care about America, you got to hold public servants accountable to their oath of office. Get them to operate and only operate within the powers delegated, and every other problem goes away. And the final obligatory, continue. Please continue listening so that you can learn more details and understand the Constitution better. I'm telling you, you go to Hillsdale College, you listen, you go to any academy out there, Patriot Academy, it doesn't matter. If they're teaching you the Constitution, they're not really teaching you the Constitution. But who wants to take the time to read Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention? Shoot, that's for almost 500 pages. And so, no, I mean, nobody's stupid enough to do that except for Tammy and me. And welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
Self-effacing sometimes is I use as humor. But anyway, I don't mean the Tammy stupid, folks. Not at all. The point is that if you read these documents, they tell you what this Constitution is, what and how they framed it. And they in these notes, they go through the evolutionary process of moving from a defunct, impotent Articles of Confederation to a very limited and defined power of attorney that delegates very specific powers, and that is it, and dens them or contains them very tightly into just doing these things. So as we're going to pick up on something missed, or we just hopped over it. I made a mistake. Yep. Write that down, folks. Your calendar can finally get a notation. I made a mistake. And so foreign immigrants is the topic that was brought up by Mr. Butler of South Carolina. And so Mr. Butler wanted to basically talk about, you know, the types of people to bringing in and so forth. So let's go ahead and let's dive into this one comment.
Mr. Butler was decidedly opposed to the admission of foreigners without a long residence in the country. They bring with them not only attachments to other countries, but ideas of government so distinct from ours that in every point of view they are dangerous. 100% agree. He acknowledged that if he himself had been called into public life within a short time after his coming to America, his foreign habits, opinions, and attachments would have rendered him an improper agent in public affairs. He mentioned the great strictness observed in Great Britain on this subject.
Now, technically, Dr. Franklin kind of responds, and basically, let's go ahead and read that one, too.
Dr. Franklin? Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Franklin is not against a reasonable time, but should be very sorry to see anything like liberality inserted in the Constitution. The people in Europe are friendly to this country, even in the country with which we have been lately at war. We have now and had during the war a great many friends, not only among the people at large, but in both houses of Parliament. In every other country in Europe, all the people are our friends.
We
found in the course of the revolution that many strangers served us faithfully and that many natives took part against their country. When foreigners, after looking about for some other country in which they can obtain more happiness, give a preference to ours, it is a proof of attachment which ought to excite our confidence and affection. Okay. Yeah, I would 100% disagree with that.
I know. But here's the interesting thing. Ben Franklin was in Britain before the war kicked off. He was the postmaster general for America in basically siphoning, you know, all the mail that was coming from Britain went through him. And he was caught, actually, they basically had caught the fact that he had been intercepting communications between Britain, because, you know, all of a sudden the colonists were privy to things that they were doing, and they're going, well, how is he finding this out? Or how are they finding this out? So they never arrested him red-handed. He actually skedoodled over to France and became the ambassador to France before that happened. And he was duly replaced. So anyway, Mr. Randolph also pipes in, and so does Mr. Wilson. So I'm actually highlighting these as well, because this is where they're actually having a very candid conversation. Now, we have heard, and we see this all the time. I see this all the time when we talk about Californians moving into your state, or somebody from a, you know, very liberal blue state moving in, New York, what have you. Because, you know, go ahead.
Or just people moving in from countries who are socialists, or even communists. When they move here, they're so used to those socialist ideas. They want to come here. They want to live here. But those socialist ideas creep in. They can't help it. That's the way they've lived.
Yeah, and
that's all they know.
But I know. So it all depends on when they come here. If they come here after we've been open to them, then they tend to have that. But the people that come here early, they were doing anything and everything they could to get out of the country they had. They wanted liberty. Sure. They wanted freedom. But what we end up getting is, after the first wave of those people who really wanted out, and then they start sending for other friends, and that's when, because these other friends may not completely share their ideals and their feelings about a free market system, about a limited government, and so forth. But this is worth talking about, because at this point in time, you had to be a U.S. citizen. And at the end, you had to be a U.S. citizen for 7 years. In other words, the standard wasn't that you just had to be a U.S. citizen. They placed a 7-year period to be a representative and a 10-year period to be a senator. So in other words, the bar was a little bit higher to be a senator. And it was, you know, it was hard. It was a hard stop. You could not be a naturalized. You had to be a natural born citizen. In other words, you had to be born here and a part of the system and raised completely up under the system by parents who had become a part of the system. So, anyway, in other words, the parents had to become a citizen, even if they were immigrants. If they were immigrants and they had become a citizen when you were born, you would not be a natural-born citizen. They'd actually have to do and go through the process of, you know, taking the oath and all of that, and then, you know, you can be born.
Yeah, child was born. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So, let's go ahead and do Randolph. And I think there's actually some really good stuff here where we want to actually talk about these things, because they talk about citizens of the world and all of that. So let's go through these few readings with Randolph Wilson and Governor Morris. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Randolph did not know, but it might be problematic whether immigration to this country were on the whole useful or not, but he could never agree to the motion for disabling them for 14 years to participate in the public honors. He reminded the convention of the language held by our patriots during the Revolution, and the principles laid down in all our American constitutions. Many foreigners may have fixed their fortunes among us under the faith of these invitations. All persons under this description, with all others who would be affected by such a regulation, would enlist themselves under the banners of hostility to the proposed system. He would go as far as 7 years, but no farther.
Ah, so that's where it came up from. It came up from Randolph. Let's keep going, though.
Mr. Wilson said he rose with feelings which were perhaps peculiar, mentioning the circumstances of his not being a native and the possibility, if the ideas of some gentlemen should be pursued, of his being incapacitated from holding a place under the very Constitution which he had shared in the trust of making. He remarked the illiberal complexion which the motion would give to the system and the effect which a good system would have in inviting meritorious foreigners among us, and the discouragement and mortification he must feel from the degrading discrimination now proposed. He had himself experienced this mortification. On his removal into Maryland, he found himself, from defect of residence, under certain legal incapacities, which never ceased to produce chagrin.
Chagrin,
though he assuredly did not desire and would not have accepted the offices to which they related. To be appointed to a place may be matter of indifference. To be incapable of being appointed is a circumstance grating and mortifying.
Okay, so much to his chagrin, his humiliation, what he's laying out, and actually what I wanted to do was address this illiberal complexion. So what's a liberal? What does liberal mean, the classical sense of liberal?
The classical sense is more freedom.
Yes, right. You know, less unfettered, less constraints. Right. So what would we consider the proper term today in illiberal? Go ahead.
What would we consider the proper term?
Yeah, what one word would encapsulate that?
Socialist? I don't know. I don't know.
What about conservative?
Oh, you're talking, okay, you're talking the opposite, right. Yes.
Right. So illiberal, if you have liberal, illiberal is the opposite of liberal. Conservative would be today, if you really think about it, because I know conservatives don't mean to be this way, but conservatives tend to actually create and want to have a government of very specific religious doctrine, a very specific, I'll just call it, morality and so forth. What we have, what they were creating, was not a religious system. They were creating a system of fundamental limited government, leaving it to the local governments to have that system. Got to remember that they were creating a federal or a general government that was going to represent Puritans, Anglicans, non-denominational, congressionalists, or not congressionalists, congregationalists. Why do I always mix those two up. Congregationalists as well as non-denominational and so forth. I mean, the different faiths throughout the Union, this government had to basically walk that fine line of not providing an advantage or a favor towards one or the other. So they tried to make sure it was truly non-denominational.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We see today how people, you know, are very myopic on their Second Amendment rights, or they're very myopic on the, I'll call them, because when you look at the platform, it's a bunch of moral platitudes. We have lost sense of our form of government, one being Republican, and secondly, being limited and defined. And if we could actually, as a people, get back to the context, get back into the paradigm of a limited and defined Republican form of government, that we would do away with these state initiatives and voter, you know, referendums where the people legislate, create their own law. We wouldn't need that. The fact of the matter is every state house, every legislative body, whether it is from the county to the federal, every legislative body should only be able to deal with in legislation and or any of their acts that can only be within those delegated powers. Where do they get off thinking that they can start creating laws? You know, I was looking at social media, and there was a person that was saying, you know, hey, I'm so happy these conservatives have created, you know, more of an open market on, you know, healthcare access. Well, hold on here. The government is limited to fine. They shouldn't even have any regulations regarding healthcare. Mm-hmm. In this particular state, their constitution did not have any delegation on healthcare. And then they're talking about, oh, well, they're allowing, you know, an expanse of healthcare companies and more free market. And I'm going, the government has no business regulating it in any capacity. I know that right now the problem is that they have regulations, that they're trying to create legislation that opens it up a little bit. How about just getting rid of the unconstitutional legislation? That is the crux of our problem. Oh, we got to create a counter law. No, get rid of all bad laws that have no basis of the Constitution. See my point. Okay.
Yep.
All right, because when I looked at that illiberal, I don't want to say it's the bane of my existence, but I know I piss a lot of people off because I attack conservatism. What does conservative mean by definition? Not in the political sense, but just the word by definition. Conserve, it means keep the way it is. Keep it as it is. I don't want to conserve this government. I want to get the government back into the way it was designed and operate with its legitimate powers instead of all these concocted powers. So,
I think that's what the intended.
I understand that, but see, if you really start understanding, you know, the words and the usage and all of these little things, the nuances of how we communicate, it's a way, you know, that they get us to use words that actually don't free us.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, they tend to have us adopt these things that literally keep us divided so that we don't really start working together. Because we can only get conquered if we're divided. Anyway, so Governor Morris actually pipes in after that, and I think he makes a move here, I believe, because it says, question on the motion of Mr. Governor Morris to insert 14 in place of 4 years. So apparently they had already had the bar of 4 years. And so let's go ahead and read this part here.
Governor Morris?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Governor Morris, the lesson we are taught is that we should be governed as much by our reason and as little by our feelings as possible. What is the language of reason on this subject? That we should not be polite at the expense of prudence. There was a moderation in all things. It is said that some tribes of Indians carried their hospitality so far as to offer to strangers their wives and daughters. Was this a proper model for us? He would admit them to his house, he would invite them to his table, would provide for them comfortable lodgings, but would not carry the complaisance so far as to bed them with his wife. He would let them worship at the same altar, but did not choose to make priests of them. He ran over the privileges which immigrants would enjoy among us, though they should be deprived of that of being eligible to the great offices of government, observing that they exceeded the privileges allowed to foreigners in any part of the world, and that as every society from a great nation down to a club had the right of declaring the conditions on which new members should be admitted, there could be no room for complaint. As to those philosophical gentlemen, those citizens of the world, as they call themselves, he owned he did not wish to see any of them in our public councils. He would not trust them. The men who can shake off their attachments to their own country can never love any country, any other. These attachments are the wholesome prejudices which uphold all governments. Admit a Frenchman into your Senate, and he will study to increase the commerce of France. An Englishman, he will feel an equal bias in favor of that of England. It has been said that the legislatures will not choose foreigners, at least improper ones. There was no knowing what legislators would do. Some appointments made by them proved that everything ought to be apprehended from the cabals practiced on such occasions. He mentioned the case of a foreigner who left this state in disgrace and worked himself into an appointment from another to Congress.
Okay, so he used another word at the beginning that I kind of wanted, and actually he used it in contrast to another word. He said that we should not be polite at the expense of prudence.
Right.
So what do you think he's talking about? To be, go ahead.
I mean, we shouldn't, I mean, we don't have to give them everything just to be polite. It's okay for us to have expectations and restrictions.
Yeah, so there's a way of saying that in today's words, that we should not be politically correct at the expense of our wisdom, of right. our, you know, the knowledge, our farsightedness of understanding what we have and what it offers in light of the fact that these people don't have that.
Yeah.
So he makes even better points to say, there's nothing wrong with, you know, creating a club or a nation stating that you have these higher bars. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. If you go to a church that allowed you to do everything, you know, they didn't admonish you about any type of behavior. Christian church. No admonishment about infidelity, you know, just do, you know, they just come join our church. We call ourselves Christian, but, you know, they don't really live the law of Christianity. Would you
it's be not really Christian, is it?
Absolutely. There you go.
In other words, organization, really. It's not anything.
Correct. The less you actually create standards, and I'll just say it's a culture. Religion is like a culture. And when we look at living within a country, it too is a culture where, you know, you could be anywhere in America and hear people say the most outlandish things, yelling across the room, expletives and so forth. But if somebody yelled fire in a theater during a movie, that, you know, they'd be hunting. Who did that? You know, because they'd want to charge that person for saying that. So in other words, we have rules regarding speech for public safety. But when it comes to the freedom of speech, boy, it's a no holds barred world. There used to be actually a very level of, I'll just say, decency. These were called decency laws, where you just didn't use profanity out on the street. Yeah. And as we went through our counterculture revolution, decency went out the window as, I'll just say, obscenities came in the door.
Yeah.
So even though you could say anything you want, you just didn't, because it just wasn't proper. It was rude. It was ill-conceived and so forth. So anyway, I think this was a good capture that we, you know, see how they're talking about and the purpose of having these standards. I kind of prefer the idea of maintaining and keeping people out of these offices, because I don't think 10 years is enough to be in the Senate.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't think that 7 years is enough. I honestly think that, you know, any diehard ideologue will actually come here and they will do everything they can to just keep a low profile for 7 years, just so they can become active politically to subvert our country. Look at Oman Ilion.
That's what I would do if I were.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, we'll bring you back into this. Obviously, we're going into break, so we will pick this up where we can start actually keeping Oman Ilion and these other I'll call them Islamists that have actually come here or what have you. The fact is, and I'll expound on this, if you're a Mohammedan, you should not ever be able or be allowed to serve in public service. We'll be right back.
Listen to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we're back, and Tammy, you were making a comment as we were departing regarding creating constraints and so forth, and I went a little bit further, but before I go further, what was it you were saying?
I honestly can't even remember. I don't know.
Okay. So we were talking about having limitations for, you know, non-citizens to become citizens and to get involved in public service. And what basically I alluded to, because we were talking about Oman Ilion, you know, mm-hmm. how she came here as a perfect example. As an ideologue, to basically keep a low profile, she came here as a wife to her brother, right? Because mm-hmm. and he was not, she was not his only wife, nor I think are they married now? I don't, because I think when that got exposed, they got a divorce. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I was just saying that I would have done the same thing. You just keep a low profile. It's no different than a Democrat who registers as a Republican, but they're Democrat. They just keep a low profile until they get elected, and then...
Yep. And that's what rhinos do, too. And as a matter of fact, rhinos get away with it because they know the majority of their constituents don't follow. So now that we've gotten to a point where we just should not be trusting government at all, how come there's still so many people that trust government? Now, to my point on Mohammedans, people that practice the faith of Islam, they ardently believe that they must institute laws that will violate the Constitution. In other words, they are and will always be a person out to have an insurrection against the Constitution, demanding Sharia law, demanding levels of regulations that institute a religious ideology. All of these things are not compatible with our type of government and our governing system and our legal system. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, they even have openly, you know, it's common knowledge that they have these different doctrines. And one of their doctrines is it's wrong to lie to an Islamist, but you can lie to a non-believer. You can lie to an infidel, you know, and do and say anything necessary to further the cause of Islam.
Wow.
You didn't know that?
I did not.
Oh, okay. So there's a really good book out there by Robert Spencer. It's kind of like the dummy's guide or what you need to know, but nobody will tell you, something like that.
Yeah.
I'll look it up while we dive into this next bit of reading. Let's jump down now to Friday the 10th, where that is, and let's actually pick up with Mr. Pickney of South Carolina. And as we do that,
I will look up that book so I can tell you, because it is a really good book that I highly recommend for everybody to read if you don't understand some of the doctrines that are in their hadiths. The hadiths is, you know, their everyday kind of practices, what they're supposed to do to further Islam and so forth. They even believe in slavery and diminution. In other words, basically making, you know, if you're not going to be, the only way you can exist if you do not convert to Islam is you have to become a slave.
Wow. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, they just keep a low profile. Lie.
There you go. Okay, so go ahead and pick up what Mr. Pickney said, and I'll find those books for you. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Pickney, the committee, as he had conceived, were instructed to report the proper qualifications of property for the members of the national legislature, instead of which they have referred the task to the national legislature itself. Should it be left on this footing, the first legislature will meet without any particular qualifications of property, and if it should happen to consist of rich men, they might fix such qualifications as may be too favorable to the rich. If of poor men, an opposite extreme might be run into. He was opposed to the establishment of an undue aristocratic influence in the Constitution, but he thought it essential that the members of the legislature, the executive and the judges, should be possessed of competent property to make them independent and respectable. It was prudent, when such great powers were to be trusted to connect the tie of property with that of reputation in securing a faithful administration. The legislature would have the fate of a nation put into their hands. The president would also have a very great influence on it. The judges would have not only important causes between citizen and citizen, but also where foreigners are concerned. They will even be the umpires between the U.S. states and individual states, as well as between the state, one state and another. Were he to fix the quantum of property which should be required, he should not think of less than $100,000 for the president, half of that sum for each of the judges, and in like proportion for the members of the national legislature. He would, however, leave the sums blank. His motion was that the president of the U.S., the judges, and the members of the legislature should be required to swear that they were respectively possessed of a cleared, unencumbered estate to the amount of, and there's some dashes, in the case of the president, and
et cetera. Yeah. Okay, so, all right. Now, some interesting things he brought up here, but one of the things that he was basically laying out was that they wanted to create a hard standard that you had to have a level of self-worth. This right here it reeks of an aristocracy. They wanted to create a system, but the Southerners, they had a propensity towards an aristocracy, because if you look at how they govern in the South with slavery and everything else, those who have the larger plantations and amass the most wealth have the most power. That's how it works. And so they like it because it works their way. And they get, you know, once you get to the top, you have the power. And that was actually the antithesis of what the framers really ended up creating. And so the books now, let me go back to that. So Robert Spencer wrote a few books. All of these I've read, and all of these I would recommend. The first one is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades. And then The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. And then he has two other ones, The Post-American Presidency, The Obama Administration's War on America. And then he also wrote another book, The Stealth Jihad, How Radical Islam is Subverting America into or Without Guns or Bombs. Anyway, so
all four books, but The Politically Incorrect Guide is, you know, it's a paperback, and I would highly recommend it. He actually covers and, you know, has the citations and so forth, where, you know, he creates contrast between the Quran and the Bible. And he goes through the points to say, you can't even make these things comparable. So anyway, Mr. Rutledge of South Carolina gets up and actually opines a little bit more regarding this.
So Mr. Rutledge seconded the motion, observing that the committee had reported no qualifications because they could not agree on any among themselves. Being embarrassed by the danger on one side of displeasing the people by making them high, and on the other of rendering them nugatory by making them low.
Okay. Now Mr. Ellsworth of Connecticut.
The different circumstances of different parts of the U.S. and the probable differences between the present and future circumstances of the whole render it improper to have either uniform or fixed qualifications. Make them so high as to be useful in the southern states, and they will be inapplicable to the eastern states. Suit them to the latter, and they will serve no purpose in the former. In like manner, what may be accommodated to the existing state of things among us may be very inconvenient in some future state of them. He thought for these reasons that it was better to leave this matter to the legislative discretion than to attempt a provision for it in the Constitution.
Okay, right. Now, Dr. Franklin
expressed his dislike of everything that tended to debase the spirit of the common people. If honesty was often the companion of wealth, and if poverty was exposed to peculiar temptation, it was not less true that the possession of property increased the desire of more property. Some of the greatest rogues he was ever acquainted with were the richest rogues. We should remember the character which the scripture requires in rulers, that they should be men hating covetousness. The Constitution will be much read and attended to in Europe, and if it should betray a great partiality to the rich, will not only hurt us in the eastern of the most liberal and enlightened men there, but discourage the common people from removing into this country.
Okay. So, as we go on, Mr. Pinckney kind of rejected by so general a no that the states were not called. But anyway, Mr. Madison now stands up, and I'll bet you he's on the side of more openness and less affluence. Go ahead.
Mr. Madison was opposed to this section as vesting an improper and dangerous power in the legislature. The qualifications of electors and elected were fundamental articles in a Republican government and ought to be fixed by the Constitution. If the legislature could regulate those of either, it can by degrees subvert the Constitution. A republic may be converted into an aristocracy or oligarchy as well by limiting the number capable of being elected. As the number authorized to elect, in all cases where the representatives of the people will have a personal interest distinct from that of their constituents, there was the same reason for being jealous of them as there was for relying on them with full confidence when they had a common interest. This was one of the former cases. It was as improper as to allow them to fix their own wages or their own privileges. It was a power also which might be made subservient to the views of one faction against another. Qualifications founded on artificial distinctions may be devised by the stronger in order to keep out partisans of a weaker faction.
Okay, so I want to highlight one part. It was improper to allow them to fix their own wages or their own privileges. In other words, they wanted to make sure, and this is why, folks, that when you read the color-coded Constitution, have you seen that? Now, I'm talking about the enumerated color-coded Constitution.
The one that you've done?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what I'm talking about, that's not what I was talking about. I actually have two, right? There is the color-coded enumerations of the Constitution and the color-coded violations of the Constitution. And so I actually sent that out. I'm not sure if you got it, but just in case you haven't, it'd probably be worth taking a minute to go through, because in the color-coded Constitution, most people are actually in the Constitution. Everybody believes that Congress can regulate or create a law over every part of the Constitution. No, they can only create laws in the one area where they have been granted the powers to regulate or granted powers. Everything else that is in the Constitution are enumerations of roles, responsibilities, property, jurisdiction of a crime, but powers, like they shall have the power to make a uniform rule of naturalization and bankruptcy laws shall be uniform as well. So, I mean, when you look at those, that is in Article 1, Section 8. So what I did was I created a new color-coded constitution. You can see it here. Tammy can, folks. Don't strain your eyes because you can't see it. But there are two sets of colors. There are page color codes, which I have kind of green and then a mauve or, you know, kind of a light red, a pastel type of red, I guess. Anyway, and then a gray. The green is the areas where they have the power to create a bill, to create a law. The red are areas that cannot be changed by Congress, the Supreme Court, or the president. It would require an amendment, i.e., the jurisdiction of the court in Article 3, Section 2. It required an amendment, which was the 11th Amendment that actually made that change. The Electoral College changes in Article 2. That required the 12th Amendment. And actually, in the Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution, the apportionment, Madison provided an amendment in a process to how to change that, but it had to be done as an amendment. So, and I'm bringing this up because the reality is this, that they've been changing our representation without authority to do so. They don't have an enumerated power to regulate representation for the people, to determine how many that they can represent. We told them that they can't represent more than 30,000. That's right. So when you see these paragraph colors, and then you see underneath that the color codes for the types of enumerations, roles, responsibilities. Believe it or not, there's federal roles and responsibilities in the Constitution, as well as state roles and responsibilities. That's right, folks. The Constitution tells the states what they have to do. And there's also the powers where they actually have the power to do something. This is a power that they've been granted. They've got property that's enumerated in the Constitution, criminal jurisdiction, or the court jurisdiction over crime, and then restrictions, and then standards. In other words, what we've been talking about regarding the term of citizenship and, you know, naturalization, that type of thing, and age, those are standards. So when you go through the very beginning of the Constitution, the preamble, that is not something they can change or mess around with. From Article 1 all the way through, from Section 1 all the way through to Section 7, all of that language from Article 1, Section 1 to Article 1, Section 7, they can't touch. Those things are unchangeable. The only way that anything can be changed is it requires an amendment, where 3/4 of the states agree will allow you to do that. Then when we get to Article 1, Section 8, this is where we actually find the laws for, you know, or I should say the area. And this is one of the only few areas you'll actually find green where they can create laws respecting these powers. This is it. So when we're looking at things in the Constitution, it's very important to understand, what is this enumeration? Is this truly a power that they can regulate, or something that they have the authority to make law regarding? Or is this something that is a fixed standard for them? And so when we get back to Article 1, Section 9, you'll actually see that that's all black and white, because those are restrictions. They can't do anything to, you know, in these manners. You can't create an ex post facto law or bills of attainder or punishment and so forth and so on. Same thing with the states and so forth and so on. So when you go through the color-coded Constitution, folks, take the time to take a look at that and then start looking at the Constitution with this different lens, and you'll be surprised to find that they're basically regulating and making everything up as they go along. Just like a bunch of kids getting away with murder, and they are killing us. So that's not hyperbole. So anyway, for what it's worth, I thought
I have a code of what the colors mean in there.
Yeah. Actually, So when you look at, I tried my best to just kind of go quick to that, but the green, red, and black for the color pages are right there, and then the yellow with green font. The dark green with yellow font, the blue with red font, or the red with blue font. So I kind of go back and forth with them. And then the gray with a purple font, black with white font, and then a blue with a gold font. And so there's your standards. These are roles and responsibilities that are federal. Roles and responsibilities federal. More standards. Right here is a actual state role and responsibility. And so we go on. There's some more state roles and responsibilities, more standards. A standard is a qualification for office. A standard is that they serve, 2 years as a term. You know, it's not a role. That's not a role or responsibility. That's a standard. You get 2 years of service every time you get elected. That's it. And so I've tried to break this down so that it becomes very simple for people to comprehend, because they've made this way too hard. Hillsdale College, as far as I'm concerned, and all of these other supposedly, conservative constitutional schools get an F because people are not learning the Constitution. And I'm not here trying to sell you a curriculum. I'm actually trying to help you understand it. So the dangerous guy in the room is not doing this for his own good. The dangerous guy is doing this because it's the right thing to do. And those people who are making money find that guy that's doing it because it's the right thing to do as the real threat to them. Anyway, okay. So without stating any more obviouses, where are we now? I think at this point,
we're Mr. Going Ellsworth.
To Mr. Ellsworth, that's right, and then Mr. Williamson. So let's go ahead.
Yeah, so Mr. Ellsworth has a little drop down. It's Mr. Governor Morse. So Mr. Ellsworth or Mr. Morse, I don't know which one, but they moved to strike out with regard to property in order to leave the legislature entirely
okay,
at
so
large.
You're missing Mr. Ellsworth. That's okay. Mr. Ellsworth admitted that the power was not unexceptionable, but he could not view it as dangerous. Such a power with regard to the electors would be dangerous because it would be more liable to abuse. Then Governor Morris basically said he moved to strike out, blah, blah, blah. Go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, Mr. Williamson, this could surely never be admitted should a majority of the legislature be composed of any particular description of men, of lawyers, for example, which is no improbable supposition, the future elections might be secured to their own body. Mr. Madison observed that the British Parliament possessed the power of regulating the qualifications both of the electors and the elected, and the abuse they had made of it was a lesson worthy of our attention. They had made the changes in both cases subservient to their own views or to the views of political or religious parties.
Okay, so for that and for this, for all intents and purposes, that kind of covers this section. We could go through the different votes and stuff, but see, things are still kind of
in flux, but this is where they're getting more and more detailed discussions as to why they would do it this way. Folks, there was no haphazardness in the writing of this Constitution. It wasn't just left to these guys, well, that's good enough. Let's just go and put that onto paper and get it out like the Articles of Confederation. So yeah. When we go through this, you know, we're actually helping you, or we're helping point out to you those things that are, you know, paramount to understand why they did what they did, and to be clear, what they didn't do. Okay? So now we're going to take a big jump in time. We're going to go from, what, the 10th of August to the 8th. We're going to skip over a whole week of...
18th?
Yep, 18th. And we've got the admission of new states. Patents also mentioned, or patents are also suggested here. Okay?
Right.
Now, what we're going to see is we're going to see these, the language... framed more in line with how it's written in the Constitution. They're getting more and more to, as they read parts of this, like what you're going to read, to dispose of the unappropriated lands of the United States, to institute temporary governments for new states. Obviously, this is all about admitting new states. And so they're kind of lending to how they're planning on putting this into Article 4, Section 3. So let's go ahead with Mr. Madison.
Okay. Mr. Madison submitted, in order to be referred to the Committee of Detail, the following powers as proper to be added to those of the General Legislature: to dispose of the unappropriated lands of the United States, to institute temporary governments for new states arising therein, to regulate affairs with the Indians as well within as without the limits of the United States, to exercise exclusively legislative authority at the seat of the general government and over a district around the same, not exceeding however many square miles.
Yeah, so they didn't come up with the, what that number was, a right. blank amount of square miles. And so when you read this last part of this paragraph, stop, and then I'll want to make a comment. Go ahead.
So not exceeding a blank amount of square miles, the consent of the legislature of the state or states comprising the same being first obtained.
Okay, so what you see here are, with Madison's intent, these were going to be in Article 1, Section 8, right? When you see the to regulate the affairs with the Indians, to exercise these right here are a part of Article 1, Section 8. The admitting of new states, they were actually creating it as a power. And they and down through the conversations and so forth, they said, nah, this is really not a power, because they finally landed on the concept that states would be admitted with full sovereignty, that they would have full equal footing. Therefore, there's no power to be given to Congress in creating a state. States become independent and sovereign states. Once they're admitted into the Union, they're a part of the Union as a independent, we're out of time, as an independent and sovereign state. So with that, we'll have you back tomorrow. Really appreciate your time, Tammy. And with that, we kind of ran out. So when we come back, we're going to dive back into this so that you can kind of see, you know, the rest of these lines that they're actually creating the Constitution, as I mentioned. But it's all in flux still, where it gets broken off to go to Article 4 and so forth. So we'll be back. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.